You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Canis Hoopers family. Today, we're going to do a little bit of off-season chat. Obviously, the big news of the week was that Patrick Beverley is now a Timberwolf. Jarrett Culver and Juanjo Hernan Gomez going the other way to Memphis. To do that and to talk a little bit of Summer League and a little bit of the Prince and Rubio trade and all the good stuff, or mediocre stuff that's been happening lately, is Tyler Metcalf, draft expert over at Hashtag Basketball, contributor over at Canis Hoopers. Normally my go-to draft guy, but knows just as much about non-draft stuff that he does about draft stuff. So, Tyler, what's going on, man?
Jake, I'm good. It's good to be back with you. It's been a little less chaotic than last summer when the entire draft world revolved around the Timberwolves, and We couldn't even sniff a pick this year, so it's at least something happened. You called it mediocre. I think that's pretty apt, but at least it's something. It's better than where we were at a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think there was a real danger of nothing happening at all at one stage. And as much as I kind of have a little bit of confidence that Minnesota can be competitive even without kind of, you know, making a huge swing, it's boring, man. Like, we both create content, and it's not fun when you have to create content out of thin air. So I'm happy at least we got a little bit of crumbs to sniff. But what do you think? We'll start with the Beverley trade, obviously. Like, what were your thoughts on that? I think that overall the discourse around it has been different whether you're a Timberwolves fan or whether you're a national media guy. But what were your thoughts?
I loved it. I thought it made a ton of sense, moving off of two guys who really kind of just fell out of the rotation and weren't contributing positively at all, and bringing in Beverley, who doesn't need the ball, is a very good off-ball shooter, is a very good defender, brings that grit and toughness and all those cliche intangibles everyone likes to talk about that can't be measured. But it's something that this Timberwolves team really lacked and really needed. And they didn't have a guy really anywhere on the roster besides maybe Josh Okogie, a little bit of Jared Vanderbilt here and there. But it's veteran presence, it's defense, it's a guy who really knows his role and really excels in that role. And it won't take away from anything that the core guys on the team do. So I thought it made a ton of sense, and the national response to it has seemed to be, I can't believe they gave up on the sixth pick from 2 years ago. And all that does is tell me that no one outside of Timberwolves fans watches the Timberwolves, because if they did, Jarrett Culver, they would have been like, they haven't moved off of him already. And it pains me to say that, because I like Jarrett Culver. He's allegedly an awesome guy. I want him to do well. I hope he succeeds in Memphis. I hope nothing but the best, but it just was never going to happen in Minnesota.
Yeah. I think with Culver and with Rubio, a lesser extent with Culver, but the thing I keep coming back to, and I think it kind of steers me in the direction of what my thinking is with both of those guys, is I'm not sure in the modern NBA what they do that really is valuable on a team. Like, obviously Ricky Rubio is better than Culver. I don't want to put them in the same bucket, but like, if you can't create your own shot, if you can't knock down shots either off the dribble or catch and shoot, which really needs to be a bare minimum, you know, you need to be able to shoot, catch and shoot shots if you're a wing or a guard, and then you can't finish at the rim, like, I don't think anything else, like Rubio can obviously make plays for others, initiates play sets really well, and Culver is, I think, an above average defender for his age and his experience. But if you can't do those things I mentioned, it just can't work. And that's not just with the Timberwolves, I don't think. Like, I don't think Ricky Rubio will be great in Cleveland just because those things really hurt these days. Like, you need to, as a point guard, you need to be able to create your own shot or get to the rim and finish. And Culver obviously can't do that even worse than Ricky, and then can't shoot, can't really dribble. Like, it's just, I'm rooting for Culver because I think deep down in there is something, you know, that can be brought back to life. But even then, I think that something is a guy who's playing 15 minutes a night and not, like, tanking your entire team. Like, I don't think that Culver can ever really be a plus-level starter at the moment. And maybe that's harsh, but to move off that, and Juancho, who, well-documented, I thought was one of the worst players in the NBA last season. Like, if he's not hitting shots,
he just does nothing.
Yeah, he does nothing else except shoot threes. And when he's hitting them, that's kind of valuable. But even then, he's still a liability defensively and a really one-dimensional offensive player. Moving off that, for a guy who clearly fits a need in Beverly, like you said, the defense, the shooting. I think the point you noted there, which was really good, was that he just knows his role and has been in that same role for so long. Like, it's so important for this team to find guys who just play a role, don't want any more from their role. Like, they don't have enough breathing room to kind of be giving guys extra touches, or, you know, guys in the locker room complaining for extra touches or extra shots. Beverly's not going to do that. He's going to come in and just give you what he's always given. And what he's always given has been on really good teams. So I think that's a win for me.
Yeah, and I think one of the big talking points with this Timberwolves team, once they got healthy towards the end of last season, was how is the offense going to operate with Cat and Ant and D'Lo, who are all guys who need the ball and are high-level scorers. And all the pieces that they were kind of able to put around those guys, they were basically specialists, and specialists are really rapidly fading out of the league. And if you can't do at least a little bit of multiple things on each end of the floor, you become really hard to play. Like, you look at Josh Okogie, who is a really awesome defender, but the offensive liabilities are pretty obvious. Ricky Rubio, Jared Culver, Juancho, Jared Vanderbilt, all those guys have a really exciting and interesting skill on one end of the floor that gels really well with that core three, but then on the other end of the floor, it's a complete disaster and it doesn't work. What's awesome about Beverly is that he does have that two-way role player versatility, and offensively, 51% of his shots were catch and shoot threes. That's perfect. And on those, he shot 41% last season. He took 3.2% of his threes. A defender was within 4 feet of him. He doesn't take bad shots. He doesn't need the ball to get into a shot. He doesn't force things. He knows exactly what he's good at, and that's shooting off the catch. And when you have guys as dynamic as D'Lo and Cat and Ant, there's going to be a plethora of catch and shoot 3-point opportunities for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's such a good point, because it's not just the fact that he takes a lot of threes. It's the fact that he only takes good threes, and he's not ever going to try and kind of outreach those capabilities that he has to take open threes. Like, if it's not open, he'll move the ball on immediately. He's a point guard in name more than, mm-hmm. I guess, role on the court. He's more of an off guard. I mean, he's effective field goal percentage from the corners, 75% from the left corner, 62% from the right corner. That's when you think of Ricky Rubio last season, just in your mind's eye, that's where I imagine Rubio in the minutes that he played with D'Lo, is kind of just camped out in the corner. I don't think that you'll see Beverly kind of taking many above the break shots. He will take them, I guess, and he's a good screener as well. So he does get a little bit of pick and pop action, big, small pick and rolls. But I just imagine him kind of bringing the ball up, hand off to Anthony Edwards, situate in the corner, and kind of, you know, drives the lane, collapses the defense, and there's Pat Beverley for the easy kick out in the three. Like, that's a really, really simple role, and then you switch it out onto defense, and he's hounding everyone, pestering guys, really just an annoying little dude. Like, the dude that I cannot wait to have other teams' fans hate when they play us, because that's not something that Minnesota have ever had, really. Like, apart from Jimmy Butler and Kevin Garnett, who are obviously much better talents in general, there's never really been anyone in the last 15, 20 years who's just excelled defensively and been really kind of pesky and annoying on the court. And that's something this team needs, and he's not going to give you 35 minutes a night anymore, Beverly, but he can give you 20 to 25 probably pretty comfortably. And in those 20 to 25, he's going to be a winning player. He always has been a guy who's, you know, the plus minuses, the, you know, box score, box plus minus, all that stuff. He's always one of the best in the league. And for Jarrett Culver and Juan Johannan Gomez, even if he's drops off 25% from what he usually is, like, that's still going to be a better player than what you would have had in your rotation.
Yeah, and that point about bringing in his defense, and it's so important because he's not a liability on the other end when you do that. And when you, just looking at cleaning the glass, throughout his entire career, his team has only been better on defense once when he was on the court compared to off, where last season with the Clippers, their defensive rating was 4.4 points lower, which was in the 85th percentile. And I can't imagine a scenario where he doesn't have at least a somewhat similar impact on the Timberwolves. And it makes D'Lo's defensive job so much easier, because he's never going to have to defend the primary initiator whenever, or maybe at all, because I'm assuming he'll get paired with Beverly or Okogie at least 90% of the time he's on the floor.
And then the other times you've got McDaniels on there, you know, who's
right.
Definitely toyed with guarding like twos and bigger ones throughout the season. So it seems like they have a lot of point of attack options, which is just perfect for D'Lo, because you need to. Off the ball, I actually don't hate what Russell does defensively. I don't love it, that's for sure.
Right.
But I think that he's at least good in the passing lanes, and he's like long, and he does take up space and kind of guard space really well, which is at least somewhat valuable. But on the ball, having to deal with ball screens, that's when he tanks your entire defense. Yeah, yeah, and he doesn't even try to get through those ball screens. So like, it really hurts having a player like that, having to guard, you know, 25, 30 ball screens a night. Like, if you can knock that down to 5 or 10, like, that's 20 possessions that you might have a better chance of forcing a turnover or forcing a missed shot or just forcing a shot that at least takes more energy out of the ball handler rather than just, you know, Kemba Walker or someone getting whatever they want all night. Like, that has been what it has been for the last, you know, season and a half. And before that, with Jeff Teague and Derrick Rose, like, this is the first time they've had a really good, like, point guard, point of attack defender for years now. What do you think his role is in terms of starting or not starting? I know that doesn't really matter, but, like, do you think there's a chance he starts?
Maybe by the end of the season, but I would kind of imagine him playing more of that six-man role.
Yeah.
Well, one of the first two or three guys off the bench and playing that right around 20 to 25 minutes a night, maybe. He just turned 33, so maybe that's a little optimistic, but I kind of imagine Finch using him more as like a glue guy to connect different lineups as they cycle in and out of starters and second unit guys.
Yeah, and he gets hurt every year. Like, that's just what he is at the moment. I don't think... I kind of look back through the injury history. A lot of them seem like injuries. I don't think he's ever really had one that's, like, recurring, you know? Like, I don't think he has knee problems or... Like last year, I think it was his hand. I think he had, like, a calf strain. Like, it seems like he gets little, you know, muscle twangs that kind of keep him out for 2 or 3 weeks, and then he might have like an impact injury because he's always kind of diving on the floor and running into screens as hard as he can and trying to draw offensive fouls. So like I think, you know, 37 games last year, 51 before, 78, 11, 67, 71, 56, 56. So he's never played more than 78 games, and he's only played more than 60 once. Like, that kind of worries me, but I guess that's what you sign up for with Beverly, and for a guy who gives that much impact and kind of like heart on the court and gives his everything, you know, dives on the floor all the time. But what do you do with Jordan McLaughlin? Like, what's the third point guard situation for you? Because it looks like J-Mac is not going to come back because of the cap situation, and Vanderbilt obviously still to be signed. Bolmaro will be in there as well. So I guess it's Noel, McLaughlin, Bolmaro. Like, who gets those minutes, or who gets that role?
I still think they bring J-Mac back, but, I mean, just thinking back to his contract negotiations last year, I mean, they just told him, go find a better offer, and he couldn't. So, you know, I don't know how much of that is them not being completely enthralled with him or them trying to practice best business and get, you know, manage every single penny that they can. You know, and maybe it's a bit of both, where I would still like to see him as that third point guard. I know there has been some intrigue about Jalen Noel playing that point guard role. I think he's more than an off-ball shooter, but I don't think his on-ball creation really does anything for anyone else. I think it's all getting him his own shot. Last year, his assist percentage was in the 21st percentile, and
that feels high.
Yeah, like, and he's just not a good playmaker, and that's fine because I never really expected him to be one, and I just think thrusting him into that role, I don't think it'll do good things for the offense overall. I know Jack Borman has other ideas.
shout out Jack Borman, love you, Jack.
I would still like to see them bring McLaughlin back. Even if they don't, maybe we see McKinley Wright kind of step into that McLaughlin role that he's had for the last 2 years. Maybe Bolmaro takes over more of that. But I still have a feeling that it's going to end up being McLaughlin.
Now, you were, am I remembering correctly that at draft time last season, you were pretty low on the Bolmaro pick? What's your feeling there?
I had him as like a fringe first rounder.
Not as low as I thought.
Yeah, I think it was like, I think it was maybe like high or like early 30s. I came a little more around on him later. But I really struggled with his shooting because the season he declared for the draft, it was rough. It was really bad. And then this last season, the first half of it, it was more the same. And it improved as the season went on. I'm still not fully bought into it. I'm encouraged. I like the signs. I like the trends. But with his size, his creativity, his work rate is insane. I really like him defensively. He still turns the ball over a little too much for my liking, but I think a lot of that is him seeing and trying to make really difficult passes sometimes.
I like that in a young guard. Like, I think that you need to you need to harness it and kind of, you know, blend it together with creativity and also ball security. But I do prefer young guards who try to do those outlier things.
Yeah.
And clearly have the ability to do them rather than guys who just always play it safe. Like in terms of a passing prospect, I'd rather a Bolmaro over a Tyus Jones. And Tyus Jones, you know, leads the league in assist to turnover ratio every year, but he also never really makes that killer pass that can kind of split a defense in with just that pass. I think Bolmaro can do that, but he also needs to learn to straddle the line of making those passes and also not making those dumb passes as well, which he does. And he makes a lot of those, right. like, Ricky Rubio throw-ahead passes after an outlet pass, you know, all the way up the court, which are just very unnecessary. They get turned over. You know, strange little bounce passes in times where you probably could just throw it up to the big man instead he's trying to bounce it through a gap. Like, that stuff, yeah, it encourages me that he can see those gaps and that he can see that play unfolding kind of maybe more advanced than someone usually his age does, but also, like, you can't turn it over that much, so it needs to be a
point. And that's stuff that comes with experience and reps and minutes.
Right.
And all that stuff, and familiarity with teammates and systems and all that stuff. You know, 3 years from now, if he's still doing the same thing, I'm going to be a little more concerned about it. But it's not like he's dribbling it out off his foot or throwing it into the 10th row or something. It's trying to do too much, almost. And so I'm encouraged by it. I like it. It's just something that's nagged at me a little bit and just kept my eye on.
Yeah, so I think I'm with you here that if you're kind of projecting the perfect rotation, Noel and Bolmaro are out of it, and McLaughlin is out of it in the, you know, break glass in case of emergency situation where he's the first one that comes in the inevitable kind of scenario that D'Lo or Beverly aren't playing.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of thinking through the guys that, you know, they're probably the first ones missing out on minutes, at least consistently. You know, I really like Noel's scoring game. I think he's shown a lot and that he's a player that deserves to be in this league. But like when you look at their guard rotation, I don't know that he does anything substantially better than those other guys where he should be getting minutes over them. If someone gets hurt, I'm really happy with him stepping in. If guys start sucking, I'm really happy with him stepping in and stepping up, because he's shown his entire career he's not afraid to step up and take shots and kind of do what needs to be done. But I just don't think he necessarily has one outlined skill that puts him head and shoulders above other guys in the rotation.
Yeah, Noel kind of to me is a very niche, like, need for a game. Like, I think there will be games where he might just get a random game where he gets 15 minutes. You know, if they can't get any on ball creation off their bench or things just seem to be breaking down in terms of guys who can actually put the ball in the hoop. I don't think that is going to be very often because this team kind of built that the only thing they really do have is guys who can put the ball in the hoop, you know, like, but I do like Noel as that kind of gunner type of player, but this team doesn't really need any more gunners in their rotation on an every night basis. Like, it's tough for me with Noel because I'm the same. I really like him. I really think that if he went to a team that needed someone like that, he would be a really good young player, but it's just tough. It's tough to give him minutes. I think that I've said it all off season long is that the thing holding him back from minutes is Malik Beasley, because they're not the same player, but in terms of role, like size, you can't really play them together as a two and a three. I think, and Beasley's better, and he's one skill, like you talked about before, they have that one skill, but Beasley has an elite skill, which is shooting off movement, shooting, catch and shoot, you know, like Noel has a kind of hodgepodge of good scoring attributes, but none of them are elite the way that Beasley's shooting is elite. So until Beasley's either moved or, you know, suspended again or back in jail, like, I think Noel is, I think Noel is kind of the guy who is the odd man out. Moving on. The other trade, which I haven't spoke to you at all about, obviously Prince, Taurean Prince. I always call him Tayshaun Prince, just off the top of my head. Like, which I wish he was. If he was prime Tayshaun Prince, you know, we'd be rolling. Taurean Prince for Ricky Rubio, Minnesota. Obviously, get back a second round pick and I think $2.5 million cash considerations, which is nothing really in the big picture. this seems to be the more divisive trade. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when it was initially reported that Minnesota was sending out the pick and cash and Rubio, yeah. I was appalled. I was throwing a fit. And then I think it was maybe John Krasinski who corrected it. And my concerns were eased. I was hoping to get more. You know, a second-round pick, some cash for the owner, and Taurean Prince aren't the sexy trade that we've all been told and or was going to happen or led to believe was going to happen or were imagining. And Rubio was a big piece of all those trades because of his salary and how combining that with one or two other guys would get us to that salary. I never really thought that a big trade like that was going to happen, but
when the president of basketball operations kind of leads you in that direction, you start to believe it a little right. bit more than if it was just Twitter rumors. Like, I think right. we were kind of led to believe, not that he was certainly going to make a huge trade, but that the trade pursuing was going to be a little bit more aggressive than Taurean Prince.
Right. So, but like the more I think about it, it's I'm fine with it because I love that Ricky Rubio was this awesome mentor for Ant, and that Ant really learned a lot from him, and the fans' connection to Rubio. I get all that. He sucked on the court last year. It's as simple as that. He was really bad for them. And Prince gives them some size at the forward or wing position that they didn't have. I mean, he was in the 87th percentile in three-point shooting among forwards last season. You know, I think it's an improvement, and it's not a sexy one. It's not one that really makes the headlines pop, especially when you move off of a fan favorite like Rubio, and I would assume that the vast majority of Timberwolves fans have no idea who Taurean Prince was before this trade. But just in the grand scheme of things, I like it more. I think it makes them a little bit better on the margins and gives them more wiggle room overall in the rotation, because and takes away a big piece of the rotation from last season that was just a negative. They could not find a consistent way to use Rubio in a positive fashion besides being a really good mentor for Ant.
Yeah, you can't pay $17 million for a mentor. Like, no. you can re-sign Udonis Haslem to minimum deals for 30 years in a row, and that feels like it makes sense because he's obviously doing a lot around the locker room. But at some point, you have to trust that Anthony Edwards, you know, is good enough and has enough potential within himself to not need Ricky Rubio to kind of drag it out of him every right. night, and not for $17 million and to be a negative on the court. Now, I think Rubio will have a better season in Cleveland than he did last season in Minnesota, and I think he would have had a better season if he stayed in Minnesota, because yeah, I just think agreed. That I think that last season was a kind of not an outlier, because I'm not a huge Rubio guy. I mean, that's blasphemy yeah. to say on a Timberwolves podcast probably, but Rubio the person, Rubio the mentor, Rubio just the highlight reel that he was when he was young, like the hope that he brought us as a franchise when he first entered the league. I mean, there's no denying any of that. But I think at this point, like I said earlier, for what the NBA requires lead guards to be, and Rubio is very much a lead guard because he can't do any sort of off-ball stuff. He just doesn't have it. He doesn't have the shot creation, doesn't have the ability to finish at the rim or to set up others in a way that kind of makes a huge difference. I think he's a great passer, obviously, but not his other deficiencies in his game, his flaws, take away from his passing ability. And like you said, he's taken up a lot of minutes and they're a negative. You spoke about one steal players and how they aren't valuable in the NBA anymore, and the only time they are valuable is when you're really good at that one skill, like Malik Beasley. And I think Taurean Prince is in that same category. Like, if you can shoot the ball really well and at least be tall. Like, I don't think Taurean Prince is a good defender, but he's at least big enough to guard wings and to guard fours and to kind of oscillate between those two positions. If you can do that and shoot 40% from three, shoot off movement, come off screens, like, you've got a place in the NBA, and certainly on this team with a bunch of guys who command the ball and who are pretty willing passers as well to shooters. So I agree that I was a little bit underwhelmed to begin with, but I've come around on it. I think that fit right now, when you're looking to any player to bring into the Timberwolves, the way they fit around the quote unquote big three, very quote unquote big three, is that's the most important thing. They have to be able to shoot, they have to be low usage, they have to be able to at least hold their own defensively and not be like a major liability on that end. And I think Prince kind of checks all those boxes.
And he's $4 million cheaper. And
right,
they didn't bring in any future money with it either. So if he doesn't work at all, if he's awful, then it's then he's gone next year. So it mm-hmm. doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, I don't think, especially from like a team building strategy. And moving off that $4 million, I think, helped create space to bring in Beverly, and along with that extra space to either sign McLaughlin and Vanderbilt or maybe target someone else here. But I feel like that's incredibly unrealistic at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Before we go to a quick break, how much do you think Vanderbilt... I think Vanderbilt definitely comes back. I don't know if mm-hmm. you feel the same. How much do you think they give him?
As little as they possibly can.
Qualifying offer? Do you think he might take the qualifying offer?
That's kind of what I'm thinking at this point. I'd be kind of surprised if another team gave him more. And if they did, it wouldn't shock me if Minnesota said, okay, good luck.
They've got a history of that with the Tyus Jones kind of thing. I know Tyus got a fuckload of cash, but like,
right.
If he gets like 6 million, like, you know, like 3 years, 18 million, they're not going to bring him back to life.
Yeah, every move they've made in the last however many months has really felt, it's been pay as little as possible and keep the future as flexible as possible. So if someone comes in with a multi-year contract for Vanderbilt, paying more than the qualifying, I would be really surprised if the Timberwolves matched it and took on that future money for a guy that I like him. I think there are things that he does that are interesting, but I'm not fully convinced that he's really part of the picture even for the season after this one.
Yeah, look, I'm a Vanderbilt stan, so I want them to, I would love them to bring him back on a multi-year contract. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you could pay him too much, especially not with, like, he's played 92 NBA games,
yeah,
and probably 25 of those has been as an end of bench guy in garbage time. Like, he's virtually, in terms of experience, like a rookie. So you can't be paying him any more than what you see fit, and that's on the low end of, you know, maybe 3 or 4 million. I'd say the contract they have out there for him, and this is speculation obviously, would be around 3 million, like, you know, maybe three, yeah, which is low. And I respect that Vanderbilt probably thinks he's worth more than that. I would be shocked at this point if he doesn't just sign the qualifying offer. It makes him a unrestricted free agent next summer. I'm pretty sure it also inbuilds a no trade clause into your contract if you take the qualifying offer, which means that he certainly becomes an unrestricted free agent with a, you know, and gets to choose the team of his choice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that, I mean, maybe, but I think with both him and McLaughlin in a way that is really good business, they're also pretty disrespectful to these guys who they, and that's a bad way to put it, because it's not disrespectful to do the best thing for the business and do the best thing for the salary cap. But in terms of rewarding these guys for the effort they've put in for the team, they just don't get that, and they're not going to. And like you said, they tell McLaughlin, go and get more money. You know, like, if you can go and get more money, like, that's a good thing for you, but we're not going to give it to you. And I think that usually ends up with, well, okay, I'm just going to take the qualifying offer, hopefully have a really good season. I think Vanderbilt's in a good position to take the qualifying offer because I think that he'll probably start, like, or at least be playing 20 minutes a night. Like, if you're going to take the qualifying offer and then you're going to come back and start 60 games, that's where you want to be, because you're going to have ample opportunity to show teams that you are worth, you know, $5 million next summer or $7 million, like, I think that's what ends up happening. I don't like it because I think once you do sign the qualifying offer, the odds of them ever being re-signed, they drop pretty significantly because they're kind of feeling a little bit disrespected probably, and that they won't pay what they thought they were worth. So, I don't know. I love Vando, man. I want him back. All of his defensive numbers are so good. The team is so much better when he's on the floor defensively. He can't catch the ball. He can't do anything except for play defense. But I love it. I'm a sucker for guys who just play defense really hard. Like, even as you said before, it's so much less valuable now than it ever was. But your Josh Okogie, your Jared Vanderbilt's, like, I'll always have a place in my heart for guys like that.
Yeah, and that fits perfectly next to Towns. And just to solidify that defensive point, I mean, the Timberwolves' defensive rating drops, or is 5.8 points per possession better when he's on the court versus when he's off, which is in the 91st percentile. And he makes a substantial difference to their defense, and that fit alongside Towns, since Towns can stretch the floor offensively, it's a lot more seamless. I like Vanderbilt. I'm more than okay with him coming back and re-signing. My view on it is just I'm not fully convinced that the Timberwolves view him like a lot of the fans do, and I'm not sure that they're fully convinced that he's part of the long-term picture.
Yeah. I definitely don't disagree. I think my bias sometimes gets in the way with Vando. Like, I just love him. I love guys who just go all out on the court, which is one of the reasons I think I'm really excited about the Beverly acquisition. Just to add one more stat on that, Minnesota's defensive rating with him and Towns on the floor, and I know that's always been the bugaboo with McDaniels and with Covington, guys who are really good defenders. When they were paired next to Towns, they were always really bad. Like, I've got the numbers here in front of me, so I'll go through the whole thing. Like, McDaniels, they were 6.3 points per 100 possessions worse when McDaniels was on the floor with Towns, in 853 minute sample size, so not a small sample size. The season prior, 7 points per 100 possessions worse when Covington was next to Towns. Obviously, both of those guys are really good defenders as well.
Right.
And then Jared Vanderbilt, they're 5 points better when Vanderbilt's on the floor with Towns. Their defensive rating is 107.1 when those two are on the floor this season. Philly's defensive rating this season was 107.1, which was second in the league. It's a bad way to frame it, but like when they're on the floor together, they're on par with Philly's defense. When they're off the floor, they're worse than the worst team in the league. Like, that's the difference in team defensive rating when Towns is on the floor with and without Vando. So I think that is what I just love to see, like, those weird stats that role players get every season, like your Alex Caruso's, and he's got that kind of vibe. He's got a Caruso vibe to him, and I'm all about that. Let's take a break, and then we'll talk about maybe some summer league and some other stuff that happened throughout the offseason that maybe isn't as exciting as the trades. Hey guys, it's Jake here. Before we get into the sponsored ads, I'd just like to remind you that all my writing and video content is now available in newsletter form, and that I'd love for you to subscribe. Every week, there'll be 3 issues sent out directly to your email inbox or available on the website. On Wednesdays, there is Straight Sets, which goes into the specific certain play calls from Chris Finch. That'll be accompanied by video breakdowns, diagrams, written words. On Friday, there is a deep dive, like this week's, about the way Patrick Beverley defends against screens and how it will help the Timberwolves. And on Sunday, there is a week in review, which is a quick glance over the best and worst parts of the week, and that's where the game recaps and all that stuff will be as well when the season starts. I love that you listen to the show, and I'd love to have you on board as a subscriber to the newsletter. If that sounds appealing, head over to howlsandgrowls.substack.com. That's howlsandgrowls.substack.com. Or just check out the link in the show notes and you can find it there. Thanks, guys.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back. I guess the first point before we get into a little bit of Summer League talk is the schedule came out yesterday. We're recording this on Sunday here in Australia. It is Saturday night over there in the States. I know that the schedule is not that fun. Like, there's nothing really exciting about the schedule, but is there anything that caught your eye, really, when you looked over it?
Not really. I'm probably the worst person to ask about schedule releases because I tend not to care. It's like, oh, they're playing everyone? Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's like that.
But I mean, I believe that I saw that they have the fewest national televised games in the league, which from a record standpoint, I get. From a star standpoint, I guess I'm using the term star loosely since neither of them have won anything, but Towns and Ant, especially Ant, they're pretty easy to sell.
And they seem to market towards these young stars every season, right? Except Anthony Edwards. Like, Zion got 25 or something last season, and they've got another 20 again, even though the Pelicans are perennially bad. Like, LaMelo Ball, I don't know how many Charlotte got, but it would be in the teens because of him, for sure. So,
that's the only thing that kind of surprised me. I wasn't expecting them to be middle of the league because they suck. They have always sucked. And that doesn't do well on national broadcasts. But I expected them to have a handful because I'm just thinking back to last year, and it seemed like Anthony Edwards was ending up on SportsCenter Top 10 on almost a nightly basis, and he had that stretch post All-Star break, most notably that Phoenix Suns game, where he's, you know, consistently scoring over 30 points and just putting highlight after highlight, and you know, they always tend to market those young, athletic, charismatic guys like crazy.
Like, and check,
and like it's strange. Just not going to happen this year. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting. That's the only thing, kind of schedule wise, that really surprised me was that they had almost none.
Yeah, it's in terms of a marketing standpoint, this team really needs one season of being half decent. Like, if they win 40 games next season, and Anthony Edwards is the player that we suspect that he could be, like, they'd get in 15 games, I reckon, next season. You know, nationally televised, just because they do have really marketable players. Like, people love D'Angelo Russell or hate him. But, you know, like, he has a stan base that's as big as, you know, bigger than any player of his talent level probably should be. Anthony Edwards is genuinely one of the most marketable young players in the league. Like, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And then Towns is a genuine star. Like, I don't think Towns is as marketable as maybe the other two guys. And I know that his reputation around the league just keeps getting crumbled more and more by the year and with every game that Minnesota loses. But, like, he's fun to watch. If they can just become a team that is competitive on a nightly basis, I feel like that's all they need to, you know, they do it for one season, they can really kind of boost their public image. But, yeah, I agree with you. The schedule's the schedule. Like, you are, I think the most important thing is the stuff that I don't have the time to work out, which is how many rest days you get, how many times you play back-to-backs, you know, home and away back-to-backs as well. Like, they're the things that in the season I seem to maybe take more notice of, kind of working against you or working for you. I know they start the season with a really, you know, good stretch of games. I posted something on Twitter yesterday. They have a stretch between Feb and March that I think it's around 17 games that every single one of them seems winnable, and that's the only thing that stood out to me when I kind of had a look through it. Like, it's a really nice stretch. I'll go through it, but we've got time. We've always got time. back-to-back with Detroit, back-to-back against Sacramento, Chicago, Indiana, Charlotte, Toronto, Memphis, Philly, Cleveland, Golden State, Oklahoma City, back-to-back against Portland, Oklahoma City again, and then Orlando. Like, they're about 50-50, you know, home and away. I should have said that probably, but, like, there's losses in there, obviously, like, and they're not going to win 17 games in a row, but, like, if they are in the hunt at the start of Feb, and then they can go, you know, 12-5 or 11-6 in that stretch, like, that's the stretch I think that gets you in the playoffs or the play-in, or loses it for you. Like, if you're in the hunt going into that, and then there's 17 games, which is really heading into the pointy end of the season, that's the one stretch that I noticed that I thought, well, that's going to be really important. And usually, I have one of those every season. I kind of mark it on my calendar, and usually the Minnesota Timberwolves completely bungle it. Like, they have like a 10-game run where they should win every game, or, you know, have a chance, and they go 2-8. And like, so don't quote me on 12-5 for sure. But I'm excited to see. I think this team is competitive. Like, before Dennis and Sully, how competitive do you think they are?
I think they have the talent to be in that play-in conversation. I think Memphis takes a step back this year. I think a lot of what they've done is kind of stop trying to refine on the edges and take these big home run swings that hopefully pay off long-term for them. It wouldn't surprise me if Minnesota is better than them. I still don't think New Orleans is really that good. I think what they've done this offseason is really weird. So I expect them to kind of be in that play-in conversation. And, you know, I want an excuse-free season. These last however many years, we've always had an excuse. And not your typical fans, oh, the refs are against us. Crap, I'm sure there are games like that. But where there isn't, you know, detrimental COVID cases. There isn't a season-ending injury. There isn't Jimmy Butler tearing his meniscus and missing 6 weeks, and they fall from the 3 seed to playing for their lives on the last game of the season, where they have an inept coach for a season and a half, and everyone on the team is hurt. I just want the coach seems to be in place. The roster seems to be in place. I just want a healthy season, so we at least know. So we can stop being, oh, well, if only this happened, if that didn't happen. And I know injuries are going to happen, but as long as it's not, oh, Cat's missing 3 months because of an elbow issue or he messed up his wrist again, that's really all I want. So
yeah,
really just put that to bed.
That's so well said. And it's just, I just want to see what this team is. Like, and I don't think, right. I think we're not really in the business, you know, you and I, of making up excuses, you know, and using those excuses as crutches. But at the end of the day, they are very important aspects of what this team has been. And I just want to analyze this team and evaluate them as a whole. And we just haven't been able to do that. And like you said, when you go through it like that, it's been years of this. Like, since that day that Jimmy Butler, you know, went down with a knee injury. It's been constant injuries, and then COVID obviously hits, which affected everyone. But it's hard to manage COVID when other guys on your team are also out for extended periods. And this team is just so built around Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, we've talked about on-off numbers with Vando and with other guys. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns might have the most impressive on-off profile in the NBA. Yeah. Like, and that's an indictment on the team as much as it is a plus for him. This team just cannot compete without Towns. And, you know, even then it barely competes. So I would just love to see a healthy season of Karl-Anthony Towns. We know that he can be healthy. He's not a guy who's been riddled with injuries for his whole career. Like,
right.
It's just been these last two seasons that have really struck him down a little bit. So, I think it's a good point that it's so, and that's what makes it so hard to be like, yeah, this team's going to be really good, or no, right. I think Minnesota are going to win 25 games. Like, I don't know what Minnesota are going to do. I need 20 games to start the season, I think, before I can give you a solid opinion whether I think this team is a play-in or playoff team, or they still stink. Like, because right now I don't really know. And the one, you know, 20 game stretch we did get was at the end of the season, where it's just always weird at the end of the season. Like, teams are tanking, other teams are happy with the seed that they have in the playoffs. Like, some teams have COVID cases. Last season, like, I don't want to discount the fact that they looked really good with all three of, you know, D'Lo, Ant, and Kat, but it's also, it doesn't hold the same weight it would if they came out at the start of next season and were, you know, 15-10. Like, if they, that's when I would start to believe and probably start to have some outlandish takes, I think.
I totally agree. And that I was really excited and encouraged about how they looked last year, or to end of last year, though not the first part, because that was rough.
I've blocked that out of my memory for a while. Like, that's just like deep in the depths of my head.
Yeah. And I'm glad that they tried to win. I get that they lost their pick, and because of that, but I don't think in the grand scheme of things that they were really ever going to keep that pick to begin with. And I just think it's a better precedent with a new coach and these young players to change the culture, because it's been such a bad losing culture for pretty much almost the entire time they've been in Minnesota, and it sucks. And
that's what I love, that Anthony Edwards is the maybe the key piece to it, because he hasn't been here for 7 years, and
he doesn't know better.
Yeah, and he's so kind of immature in the good way that I don't think the franchise history weighs down on him at all. Like, the history of the Timberwolves for him started last season. And, you know, like, that's why I love that he's such a key cog to all of this, because I think Towns can be a really good player on a winning team. Let's get that straight away. You know, I think a lot of this that Towns gets blamed for is not his fault at all. But I think Towns has that burden of 7 years of being bad on his shoulders every moment, like in a big game, you know, in a close game at the end of a game. I think that weighs down on him, that, like, you need to win this game so badly because we need to be a good team, because we just haven't been while he's been here. Whereas Anthony Edwards, it's just, like, blasé, you know. He's just going out there and doing his thing, and none of that weighs down on him. So that's why, I enjoy that he's a part of this process.
Yeah, he's completely unburdened by expectations, it seems, where it's he knows who he is. He's going to go out there and do what he wants to do. And expectations or reporters or headlines be damned, pretty much.
Yeah.
Which is really refreshing, because it's a sense of just joy and excitement playing out there, and he doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders.
I mean, Summer League's boring in general. Do you have any, like, I know it's fun to watch the rookies and stuff, but it's just such bad quality basketball. Like, do you have any summer league takes that you want to fire off here?
Just because guys look good in summer league does not mean that they are the next MVP. Go back and look through the summer league MVP history. It's not great.
Another mention for Tyus Jones on the podcast.
and he's one of the better ones.
Yeah.
In the last 15 years, he's probably top five NBA players to have won.
Who won Summer MVP? League. Who won MVP in this one?
Cam Thomas and Davion Mitchell split it. And those are two guys who I think are going to have pretty legitimate NBA careers. From a Timberwolves perspective, I liked seeing McDaniels get more on-ball reps. I thought he continued to show more of his kind of passing upside. I don't think he's going to be a big playmaker, but even last season, he showed a lot of ability to pass out of cuts and on the move and stuff like that, which I think is really encouraging for his off-ball role and just overall offensive flow. Jalen Noel looked like Jalen Noel to me. McKinley Wright, I thought, looked like a solid kind of just game manager.
I love McKinley Wright. I love him.
Gets hurt. He's good. He's not going to hurt you.
You put me onto him before the draft. Like, I hit you up for a couple of guys that you thought would be undrafted free agents, and I kind of went and watched a few games and stuff on Synergy, and like, he was the one that stood out to me as just like a really good pro if he gets in the right situation. I don't think he'll ever be a star player or anything close to that, but I think he could be a low end starter or a high end backup, and for an undrafted free agent, I think that's about as good as you can hope for. And he looked like that in Summer League. Like, he looked like I expected him in Summer League. He's not scoring that much. You know, he did in Colorado. He had big scoring nights. But, like, he's a guy who really seems to know his role on whatever team he's placed in. A bit like Beverly in that sense. But it's just kind of like, all right, McDaniels and Noel are going to score 20 a night. I'm going to score 6. I'm going to have 6 assists. I'm going to be the best perimeter defender on the on the court. And I'm not going to turn the ball over. Like, I like that.
Yeah, and his point of attack defense was really fun and encouraging. And if they re-sign McLaughlin, we might not see Wright at all next season, unless injuries. So maybe we'll see a lot of him. and then just the final one was Nathan Knight, who I was really intrigued by. I really like him. It wouldn't surprise me if he ends up earning one of those final roster spots and actually gets minutes at the four. I wrote about him right before Summer League, and I think he can fit next to Cat on both ends of the floor. I think he's a good off-ball defender and all of that, and another guy who I think can really play his role and shine in his role when he's not the guy or trying to show out at Summer League, where there is zero structure to any of the games.
Yeah, like, I wrote about it a little bit last Sunday, but the fact that he was averaging 6 fouls a game, I think the last game he might have got, like, 2 or 1, but, like, he averaged, like, 3 fouls per 36 for Atlanta. So I don't think I think that a lot of his game was him trying to show as much as he can, and I think that included blocking a ton of shots, and being, like, this physical presence defensively. But I like Knight. I don't think I'm as high on him as maybe a lot of other people are, but I do think that he's a two-way guy or a low-end roster guy, and that's value with upside, I guess, to be more than that. And I think that's all you want from a two-way guy, is maybe the ability to maybe outperform that position if his number is called. And like we've said before, like, his number very, very well may be called with the way this team has had injuries the last few seasons. And I think you might get another Naz Reid maybe kind of situation, where Naz probably isn't in this backup role and a pretty decent backup at that if Towns never got injured, if he was still developing in an Iowa jersey or, 10 minute a night kind of role. Like, Summer League, that's pretty much, I think, there's nothing really else to talk about at Summer League. Every other player on their roster I didn't really love. Like, Brian Bowen was a fun kind of player. Like,
it was just nice to see him improve from, because I just watched a ton of him in the past with draft stuff, and he's just gotten better. He's just turned into a better basketball player. I don't think he's going to be in the NBA at all this year, But I mean, he was playing hard and doing a little bit of stuff on the fringes. So, and yeah, compared to what he was doing when he declared for the draft, it was just a fun kind of progression of his skill set.
Yeah, well, yeah, and as someone like you who watches, you know, a ton of film on draft guys, it's sometimes just fun in a non-Timberwolves sense to just watch guys improve, you know, young guys who are clearly good people and hard workers, and that's fun. Before we get out of here, I'm gonna throw four statements at you, and I just want you to tell me if you take it or leave it, all right?
Yep.
I'm springing this on you. Anthony Edwards averages more points than Karl-Anthony Towns next season. Take it or leave it?
Take it.
Nice. I like the fire that you've come out with to begin this. Malik Beasley should come off the bench next season.
Take it.
Having D'Angelo Russell... By the way, I probably should say, I'll leave Anthony Edwards averaging more than Kat next season, but I'll definitely take Malik Beasley should come off the bench.
Wait, for the Beasley one, is that what I prefer to happen, or what will happen?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nah, what you prefer. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry about Chris Finch. This is the real here. Yeah. Having D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, and Jaden McDaniels is better than having Ben Simmons. Take it or leave it.
Take it.
Yeah, I'm gonna take that too, and that's a tough one because I'm an advocate of Ben Simmons trades.
Yeah,
but
same.
If you have no perimeter creation, Ben Simmons is just Ben Simmons in Philly. Like, that doesn't appeal to me unless you can put him... Like, the reason Philly want to get rid of Ben Simmons is because they need a perimeter creator with Embiid and with Simmons as well. Like, if you don't have one in Minnesota, it all goes to shit again. Last one, the big one. Minnesota make the playoffs. Not the play-in, the playoffs. Take it or leave it.
So is that either 6th seed or they win one or two play-ins?
Let's say top 8 seed.
Top 8. Leave it.
I'm going to leave it just. I think they come 9th. I think they come 9th. Yeah. I think they're better than they're given credit for, but the 8's hard to crack. And I hope they come 9th and then win the play-ins. That would be more exciting than coming 8th. If they come 9th and then they win 2 massive games, like, that would be fun. All right. That was fun. I'm going to do that every week from now on. Take it or leave it. That's fun. Tyler, what can I plug? What can you plug for yourself? Anything that you're working on?
I don't know. Life has freed up a lot since the draft ended, thank God. I will have something on Patrick Beverley and kind of how he fits into the rotation. And hopefully what he means for this team going forward. Hopefully we'll have that out sometime this week. But yeah, that's kind of it. I might throw up something on Jaden McDaniels and what some of the intriguing flashes he showed over Summer League. But we need games to start here.
It's that time of the offseason where there's just nothing to talk about. That trade might get us through a week or two of content. But we're going to need a little bit more than that. Well, you can check all that out at Kanis Hoopers. Obviously, hashtag basketball if you want to go through the draft stuff that Tyler does. It's too late now, but in draft season, you should be on hashtag basketball on Tyler's big boards. They are... one of the best there is. What was it, 75 prospects this year? Did you end up extending it out to 75?
Went out to 85 this year.
85 this year. Prospects, synopsis on all of those guys. It is the way I kind of look at the draft, you know, to try and take a wide view approach on players that maybe you don't have enough time to sit down and watch. So thank you for that, Tyler. Thank you for joining me on the show and always giving me a good conversation, man.
Appreciate it.
And everyone else, thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week.